Welcome to the Creative Entrepreneur Show. What do we have this week, Brian?
Hey, Rosh. Very happy to be here. If you'll notice in the corner of, you know, for our YouTube watchers, if you'll notice in the corner that the blinds are moving, or the shades are moving in the breeze. We've got the windows open, and nice. Spring is happening in Michigan, and most of us are garden planning. And I want to talk about how we can use AI for that. And then also the AI watchdogs are at it again, something Snapchat's starting to introduce and some of the other companies are doing as well. So I want to dive into that. What do you have going on today, my friend?
So I want to talk about AI integrations. And then I want to talk a little bit more about SEO, search engine optimization for the creative entrepreneur. That's a lot how a lot of us get found. And I've talked about it a few times, and I have a feeling that'll be a regular segment for me as we are moving forward, trying to discover how we're going to be found in the future. I think that's really important. So that those are the two topics. There's some new stuff there for us to share.
So, well, diving into the primary topic here today with in Michigan in spring, we're elbows deep in garden planning right now. And we've been doing a lot of working. And this is just a really good practical use that my wife's been using AI every day, and we made a brand new garden on the side of the yard. And it's going to have a whole new theme, a whole new everything. And typically, you know, we would have a garden, we would walk into the nursery, and we would just feel overwhelmed. We would look at all these different plants, all these different colors, and we just wouldn't really have a plan of how we were going to go at it. And so she made sure, really, first and foremost, to set up her qualifiers. So, you know, started with an overview, a picture of the garden that we uploaded to GPT, gave it the dimensions, said, hey, I want, I want to make sure that this is a good garden that's deer resistant, and that it's all natural plants that are, you know, from Michigan that are, you know, going to be good here. And also wanted to make sure that it was a pollinator garden so that we were able to bring in some more bees and some more, butterflies and pollinators and stuff like that. So it's a lot of, you know, qualifiers and a lot of things that before we wouldn't really be able to find a good answer and a good strategy from Google. And, when you put in these extra qualifiers, like, hey, we've got a toddler running around, we've got chickens that we free range, we've got a dog, we want to make sure that none of these plants are toxic. Just all these caveats that we put into it that would take a real floral expert or a botanist to be able to design all of this. And GPT was able to take it and actually share images of what it's designed. Wow. Nice. Yeah, so it not only suggested plants, we then asked, hey, this is the shape, this is what it looks like, show us what this garden looks like fully grown. And it did it. It showed, you know, the back row, the middle row, the front row. And then, she was able to then say, hey, I don't really care for that plant. Let's change that out with, you know, give me two or three other options. And just the fact that it was able to then produce images to show what this potential garden was going to look like based upon your text input, I thought was a really big technological leap and such a cool way to use this technology. So, you know, I encourage our audience, not only for their own garden planning or yard planning or anything like that, think about how we're using the goal that we have of, you know, designing a garden and the tech, you know, the information of, you know, all the different caveats of everything that we need, and allowing this computer, this engine, this brain to produce an answer. And you know, I encourage our audience to think of ways that they can, you know, do this for their art, their business, you know, whatever it is that they're passionate about, and try to use this technology in the same kind of ways.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts towards that?
You know, I kind of harken back to Jacqueline Green, our guest a few weeks ago, who was talking about her design services and how she was using the AI to help with those services. And it really got me thinking, it's not so much because a lot of people don't want to do that work. But if you are a professional, you know, obviously in your situation, you want to do it, and that's great. And if you're a home gardener, that's wonderful. That's a great place to start. But there are professional landscapers, and there are people who will do the big stuff, heavy stuff for you. And if you can customize at a high level each one of your clients, you know, what an amazing tool. I mean, this really, if you think about it, will allow you to be better at your job to help customize to the level of the client satisfaction that you could never do before.
Right.
Whether, again, it's outside design, interior design, or whatever you do. And you say, well, they could do it themselves. They can do it themselves now. You know, they right. can, you know, anybody can interior design now. Anybody can landscape now. You have Google to tell you where everything is and what to do. But this is better. This is a step. It's a better Google in that sense that it can be so customized to you and right. have that conversation. You can work together. So I think that was a great example of how to use it and how it will be used in the future.
Yeah. And, you know, the more qualifiers that you give it, and again, you've said a million times, garbage in, garbage out. So if you give it that quality in, you know, it's like combining 10 different Google searches in one Google search, but having them all work together.
Yes.
And coordinate together. And, you know, that's back to, you know,
put it, yeah.
Yeah. You know, to think about it, you know, a few episodes back when we were talking about, you know, my father recovering from heart surgery and, you know, using that image that I uploaded for, you know, AI to just analyze the image and give us all these different answers. Again, you know, right. my brother was about to do 8 different Google searches on every one of these bits of information. And it's like, this is a way that you can take all of that work that we would have had to do, you know, researching, sleuthing through the internet and just allowing this brain to, you know, take in all these qualifiers and
right.
produce, well, you know, what it feels to be the best answer. And then, you know, obviously the human is still involved in this. We're not just taking 100% their answer and putting in an order online and yeah. doing it. We're using that as inspiration. That is right. now our new guideline, our new, you know, paint by number, if you will.
Right.
That's, you know, one of the analogies that I like to use with AI is that, you know, it's like going from a blank canvas to now kind of, you know, a paint by number where you've got framework and you've got an idea to kind of work and build within.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Excellent. So,
very good.
You know, going a little deeper into that, I wanted to talk about AI integrations because not only do we have the general AIs, which we were just talking about, which are going to be limited in some way. I mean, obviously it's going to expand, but there are going to be specialty AIs that have specific functions that do them very well. And AI integrations have really started to roll out a little bit more. I mean, the first one that was very obvious was Bing integrating ChatGPT, and then Microsoft with Copilot. But then you have Photoshop, who started doing AI in allowing you to just circle something and say, remove that. And then also the big AIs are also integrating some of the tools. For example, DALL-E 3, you can now circle something and say, put something else there or remove that right in DALL-E 3, which is really cool. This week, they announce Premiere Pro. So if you like to edit video, they're talking about the integration of Sora into Premiere Pro and Adobe Firefly, which are two very powerful AIs, both coming out into the next generations of Premiere Pro. And I mean, think of what you can do with Sora. We've seen those examples to be able to just take something out of your video that shouldn't be there, something that's copyrighted or trademarked or just something, you know, somebody left a cup on the table in your video, but it's the perfect shot. You know, you can just take it out. Obviously, our minds are flowing with where it can go bad and go wrong. However, it's coming. It's coming our way. And so another one that is also that was just released is Demand Gen, if you're familiar with Google Ads. Demand Gen is a new format of advertising. I think it goes a lot into like Gmail in those areas, but they're adding an AI that helps you with visual storytelling. And I'm sure that's going to roll out into the other areas. I really don't know what that looks like yet, but you know it's going to be an AI that's going to help you tell the story of your brand and get it out there in those ads in a way that maybe we weren't doing so before. So these are all integrations that are happening right now. So AI is going to integrate into the everyday stuff you use, and some of the everyday stuff you use is going to integrate into the general AIs.
Yeah.
So what do you think?
Yeah, pretty amazing technology, especially we talk about, you know, integrating it into the video editing and stuff like that. I think famously of Game of Thrones, I think there was a scene that had a Starbucks cup or something like that. So they're going to go back in, and, you know, I'm sure George Lucas is already working on redoing every one of the Star Wars and putting in all sorts of everything and, you know, having the next version, you know, the AI version of Star Wars. So that, that's exciting. But, you know, think about the different creative ways that you could potentially use this, you know, to integrate. But yeah, that's very, very cool.
Have you seen the YouTube channel Abandoned Films, which it shows like the Star Wars as it would have been created in the 1950s, the trailer, and then Terminator and all those? It's some of them are pretty good, some are horrible, but it's kind of interesting to watch.
I'll have to dive into that a little further, but yeah, it's just fun to see all the recreations they're going to be able to do with, you know, old, you know, art that's been made. And, you know, what are they going to do with these movies from the 30s to 50s, you know, these older films, you know, and the digital recreations that they're going to be able to do to make them look so vibrant and look like they're filmed now. I mean, I think we're a few years away from, you know, watching a new version of, you know, Singing in the Rain or Wizard of Oz or something that looks like it was shot in 4K.
I mean, specifically these abandoned films are, it's like you take Star Wars introduction and do it in 1950s style. And you have the 1950s voice and then some of the little odd scenarios that, you know, the costumes aren't quite, you know, as modern as even 1970, they're 1950s style. It's just really kind of cool. Anyway, I could go on for a while on that.
So. Yeah. All right, well, speaking of AI integrations, this is a beautiful segue. You know, there's AI in a lot of the social media tools right now.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, image creation being embedded in all of them, Facebook, Instagram, Canva. But mainly I want to talk about Snapchat today. And Snapchat just released a couple days ago that any image created using their proprietary AI software, if it's downloaded or exported from the app, which that's what a lot of people do in Snapchat, you'll screenshot and share things that way. Right. They will all have that little ghost Snapchat logo, a transparent logo on there. And it's just a way that the AI watchdogs are trying to, you know, police and look at these AI created images. And, you know, the other brands have been doing something similar to this. OpenAI, which I'm sure you noticed, have been putting a watermark in the metadata.
Yep.
So, you know, we can still tell through the metadata. It might not be a physical watermark that you see on the image, but there are still ways to tell. Google has what Syntha ID. YouTube has actually will penalize users if they don't properly mark that they're using AI.
Yeah, there's actually a place you have to check now to say this was not, you know, AI generated. So, that was new just a few weeks. Yeah.
Yeah, I want to, you know, talk to our audience here of the people who are regularly using, you know, DALL-E 3 or using any of these image creators, if it will be, you know, kind of a, you know, a hard line that you wouldn't use these images anymore if it shows that there's a watermark on it, if it shows the transparency that you're using AI to create these images, or you just, you know, trying to download them and throw them into your graphic arts like usual. So, you know, just something to think about as, you know, the AI watchdogs are, you know, continuing to stamp down. And, you know, we're going to see a ton more of this AI regulation of whatever they can, specifically this year. As we can tell, things are ramping up at the political year. So, you know, what have you seen on, you know, AI kind of regulation and, you know, the watchdogs just making sure?
I think you shared pretty well what's happening. I think that what will be needed, you asked the question, would you use it if it had the little logo, say, in the corner? And the answer is no, I wouldn't. However, I do think it should be there. Like there are ways you can put it in the pixel so you really can't see it. And I think there should be something there that, for example, if you uploaded it to Facebook, the algorithm will be able to read that it is AI because the AI mark is in that metadata or embedded in it. So it can say this was AI generated. And I think that would, and to the point of, hey, you know, if you could start getting strikes, if you put something up and it's not, and it turns out to be AI generated or fake, kind of the way they're policing things now, you know, one strike, two strikes, three strikes, you're out kind of a thing. If you don't know for sure that this was, you know, taken from your phone or, you know, was right. from a reputable source. You're just saying, hey, this is what I think, you know, I buy into whatever the theme of that video is or photo is just because of my biases. And then I put it up there and, you know, so I think that that should be an important part. I think that's where we will go. It'll yes. be something that we can use, we can share, we can be creative with, but will be marked and there will be penalties if you don't.
Now, I know you're a little more of a technical expert than I am, so I have a question for you.
Sure.
Say you take a DALL-E image and you download it, and yep. then you upload it to Canva and then continue to do your graphic art, you know, yep. work with it.
Right.
When you then download that image from Canva, do you know if the metadata from the original image carries through?
Quite often not. I mean, a lot of times when you put things in, you know, Facebook or it'll strip things out, you know, strip metadata out. So there will have to be some rules. So Canva notices it is AI generated. It needs to continue to mark that. I mean, it's yes. going to get complex. I mean, right. there's going to need to be some investment in this, and necessarily what I'm saying isn't necessarily the way it's going to go. Of course, there's many ways to approach this problem, and it is a problem. But I do think that Canva, for example, will have to make note that AI-generated stuff was brought in. And that could even go to the point of Photoshop or other mm-hmm. online services, right. you know, Illustrator or your web design platform. Whatever it may be, needs to be able to make sure that that basic information about AI is not stripped out. So, right.
And there's even hundreds of graphic editing programs for your phone that you can
yeah.
use.
Yeah.
Those will have to do the same. So I'm sure it'll be a sweeping legislation across
yeah.
the board.
Yeah, there has to be, because I mean, traditionally a lot of metadata has been stripped out because, you know, just to save on space.
And yeah, I mean, so, since this technology is so new, we're kind of in the wild, wild west of it
yeah.
right now.
Oh, absolutely. And there's going to yeah. be some stuff we're not expecting and some stuff we are, and it's yeah. going to be interesting. But yeah, something will have to be done.
Precisely. Well, in the effort of staying ahead of it, how are we continuing to get found via SEO
yeah.
in this new world of AI?
SEO, we've talked about, it was interesting. I saw someone heavyweight in the SEO world saying, hey, you know, schema data, not important anymore. Others are saying it still is. And then Brave, who has a search engine called Answer, just said that schema is a big part of how they figure out what a page is about for their search engine. So Answer is kind of like Perplexity in the sense of it's another search engine that's AI focused. And so they are going to depend on schema, but with like
for the layman's, what's go on a little bit about schema?
Schema, oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, jargon. Schema is basically, there are a few ways you can use it. You can use JSON code. There's a number of, basically what it is, it's code you can put in your site that tells the search engines what that page is about. If you go to schema.org, it's actually a collective between, I think, Google and Meta and some other, a number of years ago, created this basically markup language that will help you in a basic JSON setup say, this business's name is this, and here's our address, and this is all of our information. Or it could be about movie reviews or products. There's a ton of schema that you can put on a web page. And when you put it there, it's structured in a way that the search engine can tell what that page is all about quickly. Now, of course, that can be gamed, you know, and people do actually rank pages based off of schema alone, and the page is blank. So it can be done. It's not that heavy of a weight, you know, compared to another page, but it is something that you can use to rank and help them. So they were saying that it is important for their search engine and AI search engine. So I think that will be important to remember. And then, of course, as we've talked about before, even with Perplexity and other search engines, even Gemini, the YouTubes of the world, Reddit of the world, those types of pages are very important, human-generated information. So if someone mentions you and they're human in YouTube or on Reddit or even in maybe a public Facebook, it's going to be a credit to you and your website as a expert. So these are things where, you know, a lot of things, even links are still important in the process. I don't know how they're doing that, but you can say, for example, in schema, your website, say, let's say for a creative entrepreneur, say there are two or three other podcasts that are similar to ours and are a lot bigger, and we want to be known like them, we could say in the schema, this podcast or this page and podcasts is similar to these things. Okay. Or you could say creative entrepreneur and link it to Wikipedia that describes creative entrepreneur. So that helps the search engines understand. So that's where some linking elements could be involved too. So there we go.
Yeah. Hey, that's the modern take to stay ahead of it. That's very good. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, you know, people are still going to search. So, you know, just where are they going to search? And again, how are we going to be found?
So, right. Yeah. And just, you know, it's not just going to be Google kind of owning this world for the past 20 years like it has. Right. It's going to diversify. And we're already seeing that happen a lot as ChatGPT is starting to gain its reputation as the new Google in its world.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But yeah, to our audience, we're going to continue to share the latest, you know, latest news, latest breaking, changing things coming out in the world of AI. And we're going to continue to give our advice of using AI for creative entrepreneurs like ourselves.
Yep.
So yeah, and if anybody wants to join us as a guest, feel free to email us or head on over to our website, creativeentrepreneurshow.com.
Got it. Yeah. So, hey, one last thing. As you mentioned, we're going to try to share some of our observations. We kind of do that in our segments, but maybe kind of kick it off with some of the newest observations. And one of the things we talked about last week was that Turbo was available for OpenAI users. Well, it's now headed out and over to paid ChatGPT users. So you will start to see probably a little bit of a change, a little bit of an upgrade in the answers and what you get. And if it's not out yet for you or rolled out into your account, it should be soon because it was just announced. So that I thought that was interesting that we just talked about that last week. But you know what? It's not surprising because it's amazing how often, and maybe you've noticed this too, Brian, that when we talk about something or an idea, you know, within a week or even between our podcast, everything broke. You know,
by the time we publish.
Yeah, it's going that fast, and it's going to go faster. And so I think it's a good idea that we're going to try to help keep everybody in tune of what is happening. As look, we want to be creative entrepreneurs, we want to be creative people, and we need to use this technology to our advantage moving forward.
And that's what we're here to help everyone do and guide them on that AI journey.
All right. Talk to everyone next week.